same old song. Just a drop of water in an endless sea. All we do crumbles to the ground, though we refuse to see. Dust in the wind, all we are is dust in the wind.
From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Emmanuel Velikovsky was born June 10, 1895 in Russia. He learned several languages as a child, performed exceptionally well in Russian and mathematics, and after moving to Moscow, graduated with a gold medal in 1913. He then traveled to Europe, visiting Palestine, previously studying medicine in France and taking pre-medical courses at the University of Edinburgh. In April of 1940, Velikovsky was first struck by the idea that a great natural catastrophe had taken place at the time of the Israelites' exodus from Egypt, a time when plagues occurred, the Sea of Passage parted, Mount Sinai erupted, and the pillar of cloud and fire moved in the sky. Velikovsky wondered, does any Egyptian record of a similar catastrophe exist? He said he found the answer in an obscure papyrus stored in Holland, in an Egyptian sage called Apuwer, the Apuwer Papyrus. Velikovsky became convinced. Parallels of the Book of Exodus describing the Eastern history, taking this catastrophe, which brought the downfall of the Egyptian Middle Kingdom, as a starting point from which to synchronize the histories of Egypt and Israel. He titled his work Ages in Chaos. The cause of the catastrophe terminating the Middle Kingdom remained unexplained, and one afternoon in October of 1940, Velikovsky noticed an important fact. The Book of Joshua describes a destructive shower of meteorites occurring before the sun stood still in the sky. Could this be a coincidence, or were the ancients recording a cosmic disturbance that must have shaken the entire planet and might have been related to the upheavals approximately 50 years earlier during the Exodus? A survey of other sources around the world convinced Velikovsky that a global cataclysm had indeed overtaken the Earth and that Venus played a decisive role in that situation. For 10 years, he researched and wrote Ages in Chaos and Worlds in Collision. He had by now taken up a permanent residence in the United States. In 1950, after more than a dozen publishing houses rejected the two manuscripts, Macmillan published Worlds in Collision. Velikovsky continued his research from his home in Princeton, guiding several dozens of researchers who followed in his footsteps and assembling data and evidence supporting his theories. Velikovsky died in 1979. In a moment on Coast to Coast, the great debate on Velikovsky's theories with scientists David Morrison and James McKenney on Coast to Coast AM. David Morrison is a senior scientist at the NASA Astrobiology Institute, where he participates in a variety of research programs in astrobiology, the study of the living universe. Dr. Morrison received his PhD in astronomy from Harvard University. Until he joined NASA, he was the professor of astronomy at the University of Hawaii. Internationally known for his research on the solar system, Dr. Morrison is the author of more than 135 technical papers and has published a dozen books. Among his honors is as a NASA Outstanding Leadership Medal for his contributions to dealing with the hazard of asteroid and comet impacts. He is currently president of the International Astronomical Union Working Group on Near-Earth Asteroids and Asteroid 2410. Morrison is named in his honor. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. David, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, George. I'm fine.
My pleasure. Well, I sure hope the asteroid 2410, named after you, doesn't get nearly as close as you are with us right now, huh?
absolutely safe from it.
By the way, I just came back from a couple days in Hawaii, where, of course, you were the professor of astronomy at the university there for years. What a wonderful state. Absolutely gorgeous area.
And a wonderful place to do astronomy.
For sure. James McCanny, Professor McCanny, MS, is a physicist who has spent decades promoting his theoretical work showing that the solar system is ever-changing and is electrically active. These theories have been confirmed with space probe data and prove that there are definite Earth effects resulting from our sun's electrical activity. He has openly opposed NASA's view that outer space is electrically neutral. McCanny was a faculty member of the physics and mathematics departments of Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. He has researched theoretical celestial mechanics and plasma physics. They are the studies of planetary motion and electrified gases in outer space, and has presented his theories at the Los Alamos National Laboratories and American Geophysical Union. James McCanny. Hi, Jim. How are you?
George.
Always a pleasure. Very well. Very good, very good. I tell you what we're going to do to get this started. First of all, thanks to both of you for offering your views and your take on Velikovsky's theories and whether you think Velikovsky was right on the button or maybe he was nuts. Who knows? But I tell you what, I'm going to flip a coin because I want each of you to make a little statement first about your particular stand on this before we get into the dialogue tonight. And David, because you were on my show, of course, in August of 2004. James, you're quite a regular on Coast to Coast. I'm going to let David call this coin flip. And if you're right, David, you can decide if you want to go first or second. So would you call heads or tails, sir?
Heads.
The coin is dropping, and it is tails. So Dave, James, you have a decision to go first or second in your opening remarks.
I'll go first.
All right, first it will be James McKay.
Just to thank Dr. Morrison, we had a brief discussion a few weeks ago when we planned the show, and I appreciate him agreeing to talk to me on the air, and also the staff of Coast to Coast for putting this together. My position here is to actually, in talking to Dr. Morrison, there's probably quite a few things we agree on, and people will find that, might be surprised at that. But then, of course, there are going to be topics we disagree on. And my viewpoint here is to take the purest aspect of Velikovsky, because there are so many people running around, jumping up and down, using Velikovsky's name today that really, they're adding a lot, they're changing it, they're using Velikovsky's name as a draw, and then doing a bait and switch, so to speak. So what I really want to do here is to present a purist Velikovsky viewpoint, for better or for worse. And Velikovsky, of course, made a lot of mistakes, but I believe that he also had some things that were very groundbreaking in the 1950s. And here is, I believe, what happened. That if you take, for example, George, I'm going to use this example. Say I come up to you, you're wearing a white shirt, black tie, and street shoes. And I say, George, you're wearing a white shirt, a black tie, and tennis shoes.
Mm-hmm.
My total statement is false. But that doesn't mean that you're not wearing a white shirt and a black tie.
True.
And so this is somewhat what has happened with Velikovsky. He's made some statements, he's mixed them with other statements that were false, and if you mix it all together, the sum total of what he said, you could easily state as being false. But mixed in there, there were some basic concepts that I want to, in his defense, since he is not here, use as a basis for saying that he discovered some groundbreaking ideas and put them forward. Some of them had already been stated by people in the past, like Ignatius Donnelly. Just quickly, I'll go through my short list here.
Well, let's save that, Jim, yeah, as we get into the dialogue, okay?
That's fine, yeah.
I just wanted you to, you know, take your position on Velikovsky, and you've done so eloquently. Dr. Morrison, your take on this.
I think Velikovsky is an interesting case, because he looked like a scientist, but wasn't. And a lot of people were confused by this. I think probably the best summary is from Henry Bauer, who wrote the book Beyond Velikovsky's, very well reputed, and said this. Velikovsky displays a lack of understanding of chemistry, physics, and astronomy. He is not only ignorant of the facts, his whole approach is not that of a scientist. He does not weigh his evidence. He does not deduce independent tests of validity. Yet he discusses these subjects in a manner that would convey to a layman an apparent familiarity with these fields. A lot of people believed him. When I was in grade school, I first came across Worlds in Collision. There was nobody in my little town to tell me that this wasn't legitimate science. So it's an interesting case of someone who talked like science, but actually there was nothing there.
You were a student of Carl Sagan, right?
Yeah.
Did Carl ever talk about Velikovsky at all?
Oh, a little bit, sure.
And I would assume he would say that Velikovsky was all washed up on this theory.
Well, he was simply wrong. I'm sure he was sincere. I'm sure he worked hard. But his ideas about what happened in the solar system were demonstrably wrong.
Okay. Now, also, as we continue this dialogue, I want both of you to very freely jump in and talk with each other as we do this. I'm going to basically moderate this and ask you questions as we move, but you are more than welcome to talk with each other as well on this. Jim, do you believe, of course, Velikovsky believes that Venus was a captured comet. Is that correct?
That's Velikovsky's main hypothesis, that Venus was a large comet first noticed by the planet Jupiter by the ancients and then meandered through the solar system, first encountering Mars, and claims that the ancients saw the comet extract the atmosphere and water of Mars, claiming that Mars was prior to that a blue planet like Earth, and then eventually encountered Earth on two separate occasions, 52 years apart, and then eventually nestled into the orbit where we see Venus today and lost its properties as being a comet.
Do you subscribe to that part of the theory that Venus was a captured comet?
Well, now, Velikovsky's original story was that Venus was blasted out of Jupiter, but herein lies one of his, as Dr. Morrison states, one of his assumptions or unscientific results based on his belief, or the he was looking through the eyes of the ancients through the texts he was reading.
Right.
And on this, I agree with Dr. Morrison that planets don't fly out of other planets. And they simply don't. It's something coming out of Jupiter would be in a gaseous state. I mean, it wouldn't.
Well,
didn't there's other mechanical problems with that process.
Didn't the moon come out of the Earth? And though it wasn't a planet, it's still pretty good size.
Yeah, but Jupiter has a tremendous atmosphere, and so the dynamics. However, in fact, astronomers are still going back and forth over where our moon came from, whether it was captured, whether it was part of the original system with the original planet, or whether something hit Earth and knocked it out, and then Earth reformed into the ball we see today. You know, I don't believe mainstream astronomers have decided on a final scenario for that. I see it all the time going back and forth. It's like every 2 years you hear the other scenario, and then 2 years later you hear the other one. But to answer your question, I do see scenarios. In fact, the last appendix of my weather book, I have a chapter that actually I wrote in 1982 called From Exodus to Voyager 2, the Velikovsky Connection. And what I did is I put forth a scenario based on the comet model that I propose, which is the plasma discharge comet model, which shows that capture was the process that brought Venus into the solar system. And then the tail drag was what caused the orbital circularization, which occurred, in my estimation, over a period of about 600 years. And this is a scenario. Now, I also look at the planet Venus, and Reginald Newell, a chemist from back in the 80s, made an objective view of Venus, and he said if you just look at it, it's a younger planet. But if you look throughout the solar system, my view is that many of the objects in the solar system came later at some point they were captured or brought in at a later date. And so I'm a proponent of the capture as a mechanism for some of the members of the solar system. For example, I don't believe Titan, that we're now observing out by Saturn, was an original moon of Saturn that somehow was mm-hmm. captured. And so we have many examples. But the back to the Venus scenario, which is what we're talking about tonight, I do see the model working and showing how Venus could become a planet as a large comet. The larger comets have enough gravitational attraction to retain the material they're drawing in this plasma discharge comet model. And that's what causes the reduction in orbit, the circularization. And then the two encounters with Earth also would have changed the orbit and certainly would have had a drastic effect on Earth.
David, you believe, of course, Venus formed in the solar system like the other planets, I assume.
Yeah, but let me try to go back to Velikovsky for a minute.
All right.
Instead of Jim's ideas. Velikovsky put together this scenario primarily from studying ancient manuscripts. He found places where different cultures described catastrophic events. Of course, they only knew about what happened right where they were. But he tried to put it together into a global story. And whether it was due to Venus or Mars or whatever, he had, as you said in your introduction, some horrendous events happening on Earth. Floods, volcanoes erupting, the Earth changing its rotation. Huge catastrophes. And we can look now at the evidence and ask, did those catastrophes happen? The answer is a flat no. There were no global floods. There were no global eruptions. There was none of this going on. And if it didn't happen, you don't need the theories about Venus.
Well, is it possible they overestimated global, and maybe it was really regional? Maybe we had tremendous regional flooding, maybe going back to where Noah's Ark was, for example, in that area. Maybe we did have some volcanoes that blackened the sky, but only during a certain area. Is that possible?
Sure, sure. All I'm saying is that you can go back. I think you even mentioned in your introduction, Sinai erupted.
Yes.
Well, you know, I've been to Sinai. You can go to Sinai. It has not erupted in the last few thousand years. That you can check these facts. Did it happen? Did the moon's surface become liquid and bubble, the way Velikovsky said? Go down the whole list. The answer is no, it didn't happen.
The theory of Velikovsky, of course, too, is that Venus is 6,000 years old, at least in our solar system, Jim McCanney, or 6,000 years old as a formed planet.
The scenario, the dating that Velikovsky uses is 1447 BC was the first encounter with Earth. So it had to have been in the solar system possibly for hundreds of years prior to that, orbiting, passing by Mars, working its way into a position where it finally crossed Earth's orbit and encountered it. And then the second encounter, according to Velikovsky, was 1395. And he picked these dates. There were many references to a 50-year period between the two encounters. And so that's where he got those dates. And I want to add this also, that dating of past events like this, and there, this is one of the huge quagmires of Velikovsky, and probably where most of the debate back and forth was centered upon, was trying to verify these dates with texts of ancient cultures, with tree rings, with the ice sheet on Greenland, on and on. And so when you get into these type of things, or carbon dating or dating of any type of activity in the past, this is where an enormous controversy always erupts.
See, part of the thing, too, is, as David points out, that Velikovsky really was not a scientist, really schooled in astronomy or what was going on with planets. He, you know, he practiced psychoanalysis when he lived in Palestine, and, you know, he received a medical degree in 1921. All of a sudden, he becomes this expert in space. I guess that probably hurt his credibility somewhat. We'll be back in a moment with our guest, James McCanney, Dr. David Morrison, as we talk about the theories, worlds in collision of Velikovsky.
to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com.
Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, the main issue of the After Dark newsletter will be a special UFO series. Might want to pick up the After Dark newsletter. They'll still get you 14 issues, by the way, for the price of 12. Call 1-888-727-5505. 1-888-727-5505. Go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome to the Velikovsky Story Debate with James McCanny, Dr. David Morrison, right here on Coast to Coast. David, what, if anything, fascinates you about this entire Velikovsky issue? Is there anything there?
Well, yeah, and one of the things I think is a response to what Jim was just saying about the fact that sometimes it's hard to establish dates, and if there were indeed records of these past catastrophes, I'm sure there'd be a lot of scientific debate on which thing happened at which date and what caused it. But, you know, there isn't any record of it. We have, for instance, ice cores from Greenland and from the Antarctic, in which you can see a layer for every single year. You can determine temperature. You can see if there's volcanic dust. You can see if there's dust coming from events in the sky. And there's nothing anywhere in the last 10,000 years. So if there's no record, then there's nothing to argue about dating.
Astronomically speaking, David, is it possible for an object to get captured, let's say, in our solar system and then become part of it?
Pretty darned hard. No effort, no record that anything like that's ever happened, and it would be very tricky to accomplish. But, you know, scientists don't have a very good record when they say something's impossible. So I'm not going to say it's impossible.
What do you think?
I'm going to say, show me the evidence that it ever happened.
James McCanny, what do you think?
Well, therein lies the crux, because scientifically we've only been astute for, a few hundred years. And this Velikovsky interpretation of the ancients saying that Venus was born of Jupiter, some people say Saturn, but basically captured by one of the planets. Nobody was there in modern times. The dichotomy here, however, is that if we use that as a yardstick for all scientific endeavor, nobody was around during the Big Bang either. But we certainly hold that in high regard in some certain circles. But So you have to weigh the evidence, as Dr. Morrison says, and the probability and what is the possibility of this happening. My view in the solar system is to go out and look at the planets and moons, and even the moons, say, of Jupiter are all different. They're right next to each other, but they're all different in composition, in structure, in surface features. Io is a highly volcanic moon, and my way of thinking, that's possibly a new addition, but oddly enough, it's the closest moon to Jupiter, which means that if it was captured, it would have had to work its way past the other three major moons. And so there you're talking about possible close encounters during this capture process. So, and ultimately, nobody was there to see it, so we're really left with the situation, and for that matter, the concept that the solar system all formed at one time 4.5 billion years ago, which is the standard theory today. Of course, nobody was there at that time, and there's many side scenarios that go with that, that the comets were formed and then were thrown out into the Oort cloud. There are many scenarios that standard science uses, and by the same yardstick, nobody was there. But they have, you know, done enough, let's say, subsidiary work so that this appears plausible in the grand scheme of things. And that's what tends to occur in science, is they add and add and add until all of the scenarios seem to fit together. That's why someone like myself coming in with a new concept has a very difficult time even being heard, because you're trying to fit this in place of what is already there. It's not like I'm adding one little thing and I'm changing the whole structure of the solar system that captures the primary mechanism for the formation of planets. You're going against a very large wall, let's say. But the bottom line is, with Velikovsky, he was not a good scientist. He would have been far, relative to your comment right before the break there, George, he would have been far better off to have just done his humanistic research and then said, okay, scientists, you figure out how this all happened. But he didn't do that. He started saying, well, it must have flown out of Jupiter, and that's where he broke down. He said, well, Venus must have a hydrogen atmosphere because it came from Jupiter. That was wrong. All of these inferences were secondary.
Well, what would have happened, Jim, had he, of course, he based a lot of his theories on the catastrophes that he believes occurred during that period of time. But what would have happened had he said that Jupiter was millions of years old and was captured? Do you think more people would have believed him?
You mean that Venus was...
Venus, rather,
yeah.
Yes.
There again, we don't have records. He based it all on the records of that our written record only goes back a few thousand years, and that's one of the mysteries, is how we had apparently civilizations prior to this, and what many people think were quite advanced civilizations, and the many of the writing and the letters and the words that come down to us apparently came from some previous civilization, because all of a sudden they appear and they have certain structures and you find them recurring, like the word moo or ATL, like in the South American vocabulary, continually repeated, which is reminiscent of Atlantis.
Well, I was going to say, some people believe Atlantis. Zechariah Sitchin, of course, has done his work into the Sumerian texts. Velikovsky reminds me a little bit of Zechariah Sitchin in that they have these theories of catastrophes and events that occurred, except, of course, Zechariah goes a little further and talks about visitations. Velikovsky does not do that. David... If James McCanney, physicist, were presenting the works of Velikovsky before an honored body of other physicists, would they drum him out, or would they sit there and listen and take heed?
Well, I haven't heard everything that Jim said, but from what I've seen, they'd drum him out.
They would drum him out. Huh?
In fact, I mean, Jimmy has less credibility than Velikovsky. Velikovsky at least was distinguished and tall and gray-haired and spoke with a Russian accent and looked pretty darn good.
The gloves are off.
Actually, I still am active in the scientific world. This May, I'm presenting. I have quite a diverse array of work that I do. I'll be presenting the small aspect of what I do at the American Geophysical Union meeting this May, dealing with X-rays in the solar system, which is something I predicted in 1979. I said comets should exhibit X-rays out to the sunward side, which has been recently discovered. But since then, they've been finding X-rays all over the place. So I do manage to talk. And by the way, when I do talk in the scientific community, I really don't ever bring up Velikovsky. That would be a very small aspect of what I do. I deal with weather, the electrical conditions in the solar system, the Sun-Earth connection, and a lot of my work predated what the NASA people have been doing in terms of the vertical electric field. Just the other day, they announced that they have now captured on film the excitation of electrons coming down into nitrogen molecules in the upper atmosphere, which creates sprites, something I've been saying all along. So, but I agree. If I went in front of a group of scientists and started talking about Velikovsky, I wouldn't be there long.
But do you both agree, as so many astronomers believe, that there might have been an object, a huge object, that hit planet Earth? Let's start with you, David. I mean, you're a PhD, you're a scientist. Do you think something happened to this planet a long time ago?
If you go back far enough, of course, you had to form the Earth, and the Earth formed from collisions of objects, lunar-sized objects, and then we think, we can't ever prove it, but we think that rather late in that accretion of the Earth forming by impacts, it was walloped by something about the size of Mars. And that is what produced the debris that ended up as the moon.
If two cars collided head-on, would it be that kind of a collision?
You'd want them to collide obliquely, so they spin around their center.
And what happened to the other objects?
Well, some of it's in the Earth, and some of it's in the moon. It didn't survive.
And did any of it just leave the solar system, or?
I'm sure a little of it did, but most of it fell back into the Earth, and some ended up in the moon.
Would you have said then that, and let's assume it was lunar size, maybe a little bigger, was Earth a little smaller at that time?
Yeah, I think so. Although, you know, you're right, we don't know the exact amount of material that was lost. But yes, the Earth would have grown by this collision as it grew from lots of other collisions before that. It's only the last one that you can even guess at understanding.
And Jim, I guess you would concur that you believe we got hit and hit by something large?
No. Lean towards the capture process for our moon. I believe that it's a completely different structure, completely different composition. And like many other objects in the solar system, capture is the best explanation, as it would have been originally captured by, say, one of the outer large planets, meandered through the solar system until it came close to Earth. And then whenever you have a close capture, like the moon to Earth, then you have energy reduction has to come from somewhere, so that it then remains orbiting Earth. But capture, in my way of thinking, I have a chapter in one of the early papers I did back in 1979. It's called the Statistics of Solar System Formation. And it talks about the size distribution of objects, how the asteroid belt is a perfect example of the capture of millions of small objects, and their ability to stay there because there's no planet to accumulate them or sweep them out of there in that region between Mars and Jupiter. If you look at capture as a process and the fact that tail drag circularizes and changes these orbits, then what we see in the solar system is a perfect example of capture. So many of the objects are captured and then brought into the solar system with literally the maybe Jupiter and the Sun and maybe one other object being the original primary members of the solar system, everything else coming in by capture at a later date.
How do you handle the argument, Jim, that Velikovsky was not a scientist? He wasn't schooled in planetary science. He wasn't schooled in astronomy.
Well, and therein, too, we still see that today. There's a lot of people running around the Internet today who are causing a great deal of damage to Velikovsky's name, who are not trained scientists also.
But I'm not talking about them. I mean, the fact that Velikovsky did not have this kind of knowledge. He was not like you. He was not even a physicist.
Correct. And you see errors strewn throughout his work. And just like I used the example of your shirt and tie and shoes at the beginning, there are people who bought everything he said, hook, line, and sinker, and said that everything Velikovsky says is right, and defended it. And this is where some of the craziness occurred in the early days of Velikovsky, because it got to be very personal. There were people who would get a hold of astronomers, and once they got their ear, they would have this unending battle of minutia. And I believe Dr. Morrison probably witnessed that also. This is the whole situation, that Velikovsky was not a scientist, and he should have just cut the story right in his humanistic findings and said, I'm not a scientist, you guys over there figure this out, and just left it.
Prior to the 60s, David, Dr. Morrison, Velikovsky, of course, was persona non grata on campuses and in colleges. Nobody wanted anything to do with him. Then I guess what happened? After the 60s, he popped back up again?
Right. But not because scientists were pushing him.
They didn't have their arms open for him.
No, and it's kind of ironic because he made claims, or people made claims for him, that somehow the results of the space program were confirming his predictions. And, you know, that just wasn't true. In fact, it goes the other way around. There are a lot of things that he suggested in 1950 that were at least superficially plausible then, but by the 70s, it was clear that they hadn't happened. So it's kind of a strange, it's a part of this Velikovsky phenomenon, he had this resurgence.
Had he written the book as fiction instead of nonfiction, and maybe tried to turn it into a thriller, maybe he would have had better luck with it.
Well, I've always been amused at what some of the reviewers for the publisher said, that this isn't right, but it's a good story, and I bet you'll make lots of money by publishing this book.
And it was a good seller, wasn't it?
Sure was.
Now, you say you read the book when you were a youngster.
Yeah.
When did you start changing your mind? Because you believed him, right?
Actually, I was a little befuddled by the book, even when I was in the eighth grade. And certainly by the time I got to college, it was quite evident to me that this just, there wasn't any there.
Did it steer you into college? I mean, was this something, this theory, was it on your mind when you went into the sciences?
No, and in fact, while later in my career, I've gotten very interested in planetary catastrophism and collisions and comets and asteroids hitting the Earth and all that. I actually did a poll of a lot of my colleagues, the leaders in this revolution in thinking of a more dynamic solar system, and none of them had anything positive to say about the influence of Velikovsky, and about a third of them actually put it the other way around. They said it was harder for an academic to suggest a catastrophist event like an asteroid hitting the Earth, because they'd kind of, people would smirk and say, oh, that's Velikovskian. So it actually, I think, went the wrong way. It discouraged people.
Yet today, and you, here you are, an expert on near-Earth asteroids, we can't really laugh about this anymore, can we? About the possibility that this planet can get hit by something.
I hope not. It's certainly been hit in the past. There's every reason to think it will be in the future. Just, we hope not on our watch.
Jim, as you continue to look at these theories of Velikovsky, and of course there are some you hold on to, some you do not, what's the future hold for this? I mean, is it going to go anywhere, or are we going to have to come up with new alternative thoughts and theories?
Well, here's what I believe, and this will be borne out possibly someday if we witness the capture of a large comet, which then becomes, a moon of another planet, or in fact another planet itself. by the process that I've suggested, only then will this concept that Velikovsky brought in come back. And at that point, it will become clear. Now, the comet Hale-Bopp came through and lost about half of its orbital period in a period of 6 years. And this is something that when it first came in, remember Brian Marsden of the Smithsonian said that this comet is so large that it will not have its orbit changed at all because of jetting. That's the typical dirty snowball ice ball, the dirty snowball comet model method for altering an orbit, because we know comets alter their orbits. But he said this one was so big that jetting could not possibly be a factor. But on a daily basis, we watch the ephemeris changing, and over that
period... There's no mystery to that, Jim. We know that happened because it passed close by Jupiter, and it behaved exactly as you'd expect for something under Jupiter's gravity. There wasn't jetting or any other mysterious thing. It was just plain old solar system dynamics.
Right, and but on a, when it was not close to Jupiter, it also was changing its orbital ephemeris. And I remember pulling it down on a daily basis, watching it change, and it reduced its orbit by a considerable amount when it was not near Jupiter. So I understand what you're saying.
All right, well, stay with us. We're going to continue with this debate, this discussion, in a moment. And then in our last hour, we'll open up the phone lines as well. And those of you who have computer fast blast capabilities, at the end of next hour, I'm going to ask you, between the two here, James McCanney and Dr. David Morrison, if you believe in Velikovsky's theory or not, after what you've heard and listened to. I'm George Norrie. Coast to Coast continues.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505.